This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of the show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Julia Rose, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a Soma holiday.
The Path to Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 149 for November 9th, 2021, featuring a conversation with Julia Rose. So, I did two different versions of this episode. There's a slightly less edited interview that is available on Patreon. It's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. And in earnest, I want to ask if anyone is interested in listening to some supplemental content, supporting the podcast. Every little bit helps. So you can become a patron on Patreon for as little as $3 a month. And I checked just before recording this. At this point, I have over 270 recordings that are only available there. A lot of them are unedited interviews. Works in progress for this new podcast that I'm putting together called 20 Questions. And I upload each episode to Patreon as soon as I finish it, which is usually a few days ahead of time before it's publicly available. So if you're inclined, please check it out. Again, patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. I'll leave a link in the show notes. So, I think you're going to enjoy this. This was a lot of fun. Julia Rose. Mark Sefton's rooms and have listened to you a little bit and have just been pretty inspired by your story and got an opportunity to talk to you a little bit last week and have been excited about having you on the podcast because, I don't know, I'm someone who has really worked on my wounds and has been able to, because of that, help other people heal theirs. And to me, you were a really great example of that in life. And it just inspires me how you've not only done that, but you've done that in a way that is very, very bold and probably in some ways outside of the parameters of what a lot of us see as acceptable. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yes.
So, which isn't necessarily right, I don't think. So, how do you describe what you do for a living?
I help people connect to their pleasure by releasing shame, energetic blocks, any trauma in their body. And I help them have epic sex by loving themselves.
You help them have epic sex by loving themselves.
Epic sex, yes.
Epic sex. So, can you talk a little bit about how you got here to this place in life?
Yes.
Where you decided that this was going to be your life mission?
Yes. So, after, you know, asking the universe to send me someone that I can heal with and be able to access my own pleasure, because I was noticing that I wasn't feeling the way my friends were feeling, and I did not feel any of it. So I started thinking that I was cursed because I was having sex before marriage. So I was calling in a teacher that could help me access my pleasure, but I didn't know that I was sexually abused, because when that happened, I was 4 years old and my body and my mind blocked it so I can survive. But I knew deep down that there was something wrong with me. And in that search of like, what is it? What is it? I went looking for answers. I started traveling the world, trying to heal myself. I discovered this tantric man at a festival, and I started working with him daily for 4 months. I trusted that this was the man that the universe sent me to heal with. And I went with a complete stranger to his house for 4 months. And in that process, he kept telling me that he saw me doing this work for other people. But at that moment, you know, I'm like in my rebellious stage. I'm not even listening to him. I don't believe what he's saying. I just want to heal myself so I can be feeling juicy and have orgasms. And he just kept seeing that, you know, you're not just healing yourself. We're training you to do this for other people. And after working with him, I had sex after 4 months. And when that happened, my whole body changed. So I hadn't had any sex prior working with this man, and after, I felt my yoni, my pleasure. I felt my nipples for the first time. My whole body changed. It was so drastic that I couldn't believe it, that I was feeling so much. And that moment there, that's when I realized that I had found my calling. I had to experience the transformation and what an orgasm actually was. So I was like, wow, if I'm able to do this, I need to be helping people as well to be able to access this pleasure that is that's a blueprint. It's our divine right to feel like this. And it was taken from us, from me. Mm. And then I realized in my travels that a lot of women felt the way I felt. And then I started saying like, holy shit, you know, like I want to help this person. So I started doing Reiki and doing more energy healing. And through various times of participating in ayahuasca and other Amazonian medicines, I started discovering more and more of who I am and releasing all of that was keeping me in a victim mentality. So when I decided that this was my mission in life, like everything cleared for me. Like I had studied hair and business, and I always knew that there was something more that I could do for people. I just didn't know what it was. It wasn't in my college. I didn't know. And then when I found this path, when I had my own transformation, I found that there was people like me that actually do this for a living. And then that's when I started sharing my medicine.
So sharing your medicine, talk about what that looks like and the different shapes that it takes.
So I've, like, the past 12 years, I've studied different modalities. So energetically, I balance people's energetic centers. And through that, I could do that with hands on or hands off. And I really enjoy energetic clearing. There's so much openness that you can do through energy work. So I've done the energy, but I'm really into the tantra aspect, the sacred sexuality, like not just using energy to heal, but also using sexual energy to heal. So, and I help women through yoni eggs coaching and yoni massages and my coaching programs, where we go step by step in taking off the layers of trauma, of shame, of pain and disconnection, and helping them get back to that pleasure. So for women, it's about reclaiming their power. It's about reclaiming that voice that was lost, that was silenced. So a lot of my sessions are 3 to 4 hours with women, and we work on releasing the blockages, releasing it from the voice, releasing it from the body through body de-armoring, through yoni de-armoring, and also giving a voice to her vulva. So there's a point in the session that I am talking to the vulva as the voice is coming from her. So she's speaking her boundaries, what happened, what can the sex express, what are their desires and boundaries, so the heart can listen. So we work on connecting the heart and sex together. And for men is how to master the sexual energy. A lot of men come for me because they want to become multi-orgasmic. So I teach them how to sublimate that energy, how to master their sexual energy so they don't feel like they always have to either be self-pleasuring or having to go with their partner to have pleasure. And also how to gain confidence. I feel like a lot of men need that confidence in bed. They want to know how to pleasure a woman or their partner. They want to know how to harness that energy and make abundance money with it. So between the man and the woman, what we see in sacred sexuality is that when we realize that we're divine creators, that we can manifest with our sexual energy, that we can heal with our sexual energy, that when we make love, we are sacred beings. It changes the patterns in your mind. It opens up your heart. You see yourself as sacred, as a sacred temple. So when you're engaging with somebody, it's not just, for casual sex. It's a big deal. When we discover that we are energetic beings, and that when we penetrate with all of our being, and we're receiving that penetration as well, that to become one, it's actually a fact. Energetically, we do become one. We change that outlook in what sex really is. So I love working with sacred sexuality energy. And that's what's really fueled me and changed my whole life, not just physically, but emotionally and energetically, to know that the fact that I've been so suppressed and been raped of my pleasure is because sexuality, it is so repressed. And when we embrace our own sensuality, when we bring joy and innocence to it, there's no need to repress it. There's no need to force yourself upon other people. So I love to bring consciousness to sexuality and make it okay to talk about.
Yeah. So let me ask you, the expression sublimate energy or sublimate sexual energy, what does that mean?
So you're feeling really activated and you're feeling it in your sex. You're like feeling that animalistic, your breath, it's like, when you sublimate, you breathe that sexual energy that goes through your chakras, so it gets lighter. So every time you breathe it up a chakra, the energy gets lighter and you can actually orgasm in each of your energetic centers. That's actually possible. So when you take the heaviest energy of sexual energy and you breathe it up, you're opening up your energetic centers. You're opening up your heart. So now your heart's included. So it makes it even more expansive. You go up to your throat, then your throat opens. You start moaning. You start expressing sound. Then it goes up to your third eye. So imagine like two serpents that are coiled up around your testicles, your perineum, your vulva, and every breath is bringing these two serpents moving up your energetic centers, and they both look at each other in your third eye. And that's when you sublimate and you bring that sexual energy and you bring it to your third eye and you open. It's like you like a light comes up. And when you involve breath, then you're amplifying that. So it's like you're giving, you're offering your sexual energy up through your body, and then you're offering it to the divine. So there's a moment, for example, like when you have sex in each chakra, which I recommend, there's a moment that when you hit the heart, you're just high pitch opening your heart. You're not even actually making love anymore because you're such in a heightened state that when you go to the crown, you're just in stillness. And that's when it's like the multi orgasm, because you just expanded to the universe. You no longer need another person for pleasure. And that's the union of divine energy, because it's you, right? You are the source, and you can share this with a beautiful human being. But the reality is that you can get there by yourself. And that's when you sublimate, you're able to move from the root chakra, but also exploring that as humans, we have the potential to sublimate and elevate that energy and bring it all the way up to our energetic centers and then connect to the divine as well and crack open.
So let's talk about repression. What's your view on, in Western culture, how would you describe in general our relationship with sex?
So it's like in your face, but then also don't do it, right? It's okay to see cleavage and to advertise and sell with incredible sexy goddesses, but it's not okay to breastfeed in public. So it's like, what can make me money? And then when it's, but your empowerment with your sexuality does not make me money. So it's that kind of conflicting message. It's like, okay, is it okay to be sexual? Because you're bombarding me daily with commercials with sexual energy, but then also you're telling me that it's wrong. So it's this mix of feelings. Like, I get confused with it too. It's like, oh, is it okay to be sexual? Oh no, you're a whore. Oh, okay. So when is it okay? So it's very conditional and it varies with cultures. But I feel like if everybody was empowered in their sexuality, we would be a lot more in control over our lives and a lot happier. I feel like that sexual repression causes so much harm. Like watching porn, like porn, when we look at porn, is it really sex? You know, the most popular porn, it's more for the pleasure of men. And you would think that men enjoy that, but actually I have clients that feel so much pressure to look like that, to have a penis that size, to perform that intensely, that it damages their confidence. So it's like, what is sex? Is it sex in the movies? Is it porn? So there's that repression. But if somebody talks about, oh, I watch porn, they might be like, oh, you know, you're doing something bad. So it's like, what is the influence, the education that we're getting? So I definitely recommend, there's porn out there that's real, that's juicy, that's artistic, and less more of the more popular one, that it's just more targeted to specific scenarios that actually really harm the psyche. And I'll tell you more about that. I just had my nephew tell me, you know, Titi, I've been watching porn and I'm starting to see women differently. And I don't want to do that. Why is this happening? And, you know, it really like took my breath away, because it is changing the psyche. So when we learn that this is what sex is, then it comes the repression. Like you can't be in porn, but I'm the one watching porn. So there's just like a mixture of messages when it comes to sex in the West, for sure.
Which makes it really difficult to have a clear and understandable relationship with it, right?
Right.
And hard to feel good about it.
It's hard because we all like sex. I get turned on when I watch a movie that has sex, right? So it's like, why is this something that it's harming me? And what we're noticing is actually, it's just the quality of porn that we're watching. Because if we're watching juicy pornography between two people that are love each other, you can feel the love, you can feel the realness of that. Instead of a performance, it's a job, right? Like these people are acting. So we forget that it's entertainment and we translate that into the bed, you know? And then the women get different messages. You know, I had the message that I had to be screaming at a very high pitch, please my partner, to always be available when they want sex, right? Like, so it's just very targeted to the man's pleasure. I would love to see more of connection. Like, there's a dream of mine that I would love to provide some tantric porn. I'm not there yet, but that's like in the future, I would love to find a partner that will be willing to do that with me and for me to provide that type of art, because it is necessary to see other people and be in love. I love watching people make love, but what I see in porn, there's no love there. It's acting. It's an act. And being like, my sister was a porn star, I've had the education from what really goes on there, right? So the energy that's around that, it's an entertainment. It's a movie.
Well, you know, I had a guest a while back who is a sexual addiction therapist. And one of the things she talked about is how overstimulated we are with pornography, and that our brains aren't really designed to have that much stimulation, you know, not only stimulation, but exactly all the flavors that we, you know, everything's immediately on demand, right? Not only porn, but whatever type of porn you could possibly want at a moment's notice. What's your take on that? Do you agree with that?
Do I agree with what exactly?
Well, the fact that our brains aren't really designed to be stimulated in the way that they are with pornography, for the most part.
Sure. And we can take it to, you know, just social media in general. Like, we're constantly being stimulated with Instagram, with TikTok, with like going from this page to the next. We've been accustomed to give it to me now, easy. Forget about the journey. And that's what I love about Tantra, right? Like, you can bring tantric principles to anything. It's all about seeing the sacredness in the act, is seeing the sacredness in your partner. And unfortunately, that's not being represented in porn. And it's fast, like, let me get to orgasm as soon as I can. You know, and that is actually praised.
Right, right. Well, here's another thing, just as a man who works with other men in relationships, one of my thoughts on pornography, and I've read commentary on this as well, that as a guy who's using pornography, it's like you're obtaining something that otherwise you would have to earn, I guess, or at least go through the motions of obtaining it in a way with another human being in order to be stimulated the way you can be just on your phone with pornography. And that just that does damage to a man, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes.
And I haven't seen this as much recently, but 10 years ago, driving up and down I-95 between West Palm Beach and Miami, it's like every couple miles, you would see a billboard for testosterone treatment. And I've just always wondered, I just always assumed it related to pornography and pornography addiction and how, you know, the overuse of pornography with men leads to erectile problems. Have you encountered that?
I've encountered in clients, male clients, that are addicted to porn and their penis. I had a client that masturbated over 10 times a day and that he hated his penis and he wanted to take the power back. And he felt like he was forced to watch porn and self-pleasure. And it was this hate relationship. So I've definitely seen the circumstances, the consequences, the low self-esteem that it comes with it. And that's why I'm passionately talk about it, because it's not that all porn it's bad. It's the quality. It's who you're watching. It's mental. So when you just involve sex in the mind and you don't connect to your body, then it's just a mental addiction, right? You're rubbing your penis so fast that you're losing sensation. So when you're making love, you have to go at that same speed in order to feel. Mm. And let me tell you, being on that back end, it does not feel good. It does not feel good. Like, it's my pleasure here, or am I just, you know, waiting for it to like be over? So bringing consciousness and breath, even when you're self-pleasuring, like even if you're watching porn, like slow down, right? Because by grasping the penis so tight, you're losing sensation. And the same goes for the vulva. When you're being penetrated very fast, constantly, like daily, it creates numbness around the walls and you're cutting yourself short from feeling more pleasure. And having a partner that can work with me, that understand, that also enjoys it slow and can be in the moment. It's the journey, right? It's like, we're not really going for the orgasm. The orgasm is happening. And if it doesn't happen, you know, we keep connecting. And unfortunately, there's no intimacy in porn. That's the key here, like intimacy. How are you connecting with another human being without penetration?
Intimacy is a word that a lot of people mistake for sex, right? It's really not what it is.
Yeah, intimacy, into me, you see. So are you ready to be seen? What about actually being seen in your pleasure as the human there? That takes courage, and that is intimacy. And when you involve that connection with pleasure, it feels incredible. It's a fulfillment. It's being seen, being, when somebody sees you, it gives you some sort of pleasure than to be in the shadows or, you know, like disconnected. So I always recommend to connect your heart to your sex before making love, like consciously. I love to, you know, before touching my heart and like moving that energy down to my sex. So when I'm in the juicy pleasure, my heart's also feeling juicy. And like my whole body is in orgasmic energy. And it's not just my lower body. Because I've had those orgasms that I'm like, okay, I don't prep. I'm just going to go for it. And like, it's like so disappointing. So now that I know that information, I'm like, no, I'm going to invest more time in myself. I'm going to play with my breast more. I'm going to activate myself more. I'm going to breathe more, because I know that when I have that orgasm, if I do, it's going to be mind blowing. And sometimes I don't even orgasm. I just pleasure myself and I just keep pleasuring myself and building it up. And whenever I orgasm, I do. So it's like taking back your power. So just releasing the orgasm part and just focusing on pleasure. I just came from one of my rooms that they were saying like, oh, what about just like smelling the partner and being aroused, like, exploring the erogenous zones just through like either smell or touch without having to have that goal of we're going to have penetration. So what about exploring with your partner, like what feels good, what feels erogenous, how does this feel, like how does this taste, how, you know, in a, discovering your body as a playground. That sounded so good to me. And if orgasm happened, incredible, or if not, then, you know, we're still connecting and having deep intimacy.
So can we talk about, you know, you've made a commitment to make this contribution to the world, right? To give this to the world. What are the sacrifices that you've made in order to do that?
Yeah. So the first thing that came up that when you asked me that was like a love life. I feel like doing this work, it can be maybe difficult finding a partner that can understand the work that I do and not feel threatened. I wouldn't say it's been a sacrifice, but I have put relationship as a second, not a priority. So I feel like that it's what comes up to my mind, really. And also my reputation. I've definitely have had to like just sacrifice it and forget about it because you know, it is what it is. And especially with my family, which is religion, I feel like that was, for me, the most difficult. It was not just losing a reputation, but actually losing family members because of what I do. And them being so religious that they don't understand. And me being okay with that and still loving them in their incapacity to love me.
Reputation. You know, when I hear you say that, it's hard for me to hear that you think of it that way. I mean, from my perspective, you know, your reputation is of someone who is offering something to the world, who has taken, like I mentioned early on, a wound that you have and turned it into something sacred, right?
Yes.
So it just makes me sad to think that that, I guess what comes to mind for me is, you know, what is the reality that you, that you're going to choose to live in, or that we choose to live in? Do I want to live in the reality where people have a very limited idea of what healing should be or what sex should be, which comes with all this baggage, right? Of guilt and shame. Or am I going to live in a reality of love? You know, that's what you're doing, right? What you're doing is out of a place of love, giving this to the world, right?
Yes.
And I suppose that's why you're able to live with yourself despite what others might perceive about you and your reputation, right?
Right, correct. So that's why I feel like it's to start by loving yourself. I had to truly love myself to stand in my power. And that not only includes my sexual energy, but also the parts of me that I have repressed. So for me to be so clear in my message and in my work, I have to love what I do. And every time I help a client or I give a workshop or a retreat, the fulfillment of seeing those smiles and the liberation and the freedom that they, I see that in their in the people and the participants, it's enough for me. And also knowing that everybody has their own journeys, right? Like I know that I was born in a family that is super religious. And I know that me and my sister were the catalyst for them to start awakening in one way or another. We're shifting what's been stagnant. And I knew this when I was very young. I would tell people that I was different and that I've come here to break the cycle. I didn't know what cycle I was talking about when I'm 15, but I knew that I was going to be different than my family. And it's been healing to, like I said, just to love myself so much that also find compassion for them in their process.
So what is the cycle that you're breaking?
The cycle of unawareness, of following what has been taught by other humans. You know, like, for example, in my family, we're from Puerto Rico and my father's family is from Palestine. So I come from both family sides that are very strong in their beliefs. For you to break from that, like for me to decide to not get married when I graduated college and follow a path of just traveling by myself, that was like something not approved. The fact that I'm still 35 and I don't have a child or a husband, I'm changing just the cultural, and add to that that I'm a sex coach and that I believe that we should all be self-pleasuring. It goes strictly against of their religion, which is, you know, masturbating is a sin. So I knew that I was put here to challenge the status quo, to even put the seed of another possibility. Perhaps we're not as sinners. Have you ever thought that that sin and that burden that we've been carrying, we can actually take the cross off of our backs and release that pain? I know that I felt lighter when I did. So by me being me, I, in my frequency, I activate around me. And I know that that's what I've done in this family cycle of doing what you're told or following the strict rules and not questioning anything. You know, like I questioned everything and I still do, because I don't trust human answers. I only trust what I've experienced for myself. And that's why nobody can take that from me. I will die with what my truth is, because I read it in a book. I read it in a couple of books, but my experiences are something that the universe gives me, and that cannot be taken from you. And I've experienced everything that I teach and everything that I'm passionate for. It's because I've changed personally through them, and I'm not following anybody, right? I could be inspired by other people. People can inspire me, but it is through my own transformation that I get to my truth.
So how do you think you knew? I mean, you knew since you were a little kid that you were supposed to break the cycle. That's interesting to me. How young?
So I guess since, I don't know, since I can remember, I used to like look at the stars and I knew that I was from the stars. I don't know exactly how to explain how unfit I felt in my family. I just felt it really intensely. I was like at all times waiting for Jesus to come rescue me to the point that I would like sleep sideways because Jesus was next to me. Like I loved Jesus. So it's not that I'm against the religion. It's just what humans do with it and the power that they use through it. But yeah, I just knew, you know, I was singing in church. And I just kept looking around my family and I kept seeing that there was a lot of negative talk over and over again. And it was the same problems over and over again. And I kept thinking, well, maybe in 5 years, things will change. And every 5 years, things don't change. And I'm like, I don't want to be like this. I didn't want to be like my mom. So my mom was like my ultimate guru because she taught me exactly what not to be. So I grew up wishing to not be anything like her, right? So she taught me to seek a different path. So when people say or express that we choose who we're born with, like I believe that, even though it was hard as hell, I know that it is through me picking these two parents of mine that I was able to choose a different path for myself and change the cycle.
So one of the things that comes to mind for me with this, and I'm wondering, because you know, I also am the person in my family to break a different kind of cycle, you know, with my family's relationship with alcohol. And for me, that involved leaving, you know, this huge family and kind of venturing off on my own and creating a life for myself that is like a parallel world to the rest of my family and most of the rest of my family. There's some who have crossed over onto this side with me, and that the group is getting larger as the years go by, but it's happening slowly. But for me, I have at times gotten weary of that, of carrying that burden. And I just wonder if, I mean, I can always make sense of it, right? And I can always still be grateful. I can always go back to, you know, this is a gift and it's a privilege to be in this position and something to be proud of. But on the other hand, it's like having the burden of all this pain and trauma that's been passed down for generations, and to be the one fighting that and living the life that it requires to do that, it feels overwhelming sometimes. And I just wonder if you experience that yourself at times.
Feeling overwhelmed?
Yeah, with like the responsibility of it all, the burden of it all, and all that comes with being that person in your family who is changing.
I definitely want to, you know, set the world on fire sometimes.
And you don't mean in a positive way. You mean burn it all down?
No, for sure. Like, being an empath, I have to be consistently be releasing what is not mine, because it does get overwhelmed and I do go into major depression episodes. And it's a constant practice that I have to do to keep myself healthy, for sure.
Yeah, that's the other part of it, that when I'm in those places emotionally that you're talking about, just to remember, oh yeah, I'm breaking the cycle here. And this is stuff that has been passed down for generations, and that's a lot. So give yourself a break. Like, it's okay to be sad, and you know, that'll come and go.
Yes, definitely. And you know, when I look at my grandma and I see her life and I see what she's passed down to my mom, because it wasn't looked at or seen. And also my mom being like raped and also not dealing with it. Then it's me, right? So it's like the pain keeps passing from generation to generation. And then somebody decides, I will take it and I will transmute that. And in this instance, mm-hmm. it was me. And I'm home now, mm-hmm. and it's been a while that I haven't been. And things have changed, but things a lot remain the same, but I have changed. So I can now offer compassion and love to, for example, my mom and my grandma. And when they bring their stuff, you know, their religion stuff or their lack of compassion towards me, I can overlook that and have compassion because I have experienced so much and I can see that they're doing the best that they can and that they still have trauma that they haven't seen, right? So me asking my grandma, you know, about her sexual abuse is a big deal because she's actually never talked about it ever. So I started seeing that, wow, it does get passed on. And although I've read about it, but when you see it And when you see how they've actually changed a little bit and they're more open, because when you work on yourself, you heal seven generations back and seven generations into the future. Like, I believe that. And I've seen the changes, the open mindedness to, you know, my grandma asking me, hey, can you teach me how to do a penis massage so I can do it to your grandpa? And I'm like, whoa, that just happened, you know? It took 10 years, man. But, you know, she's there now. So those are the little things that are like, you know, yes, you know, by you loving yourself, by you being in your truth, you impact. And that's the reward that I see now, that I can hug them, that I can show my grandpa a hug and he's hugging me back. You know, those little things of actually just being able to talk about sex in general. Just that's a plus, you know, being able to talk to my mom about, you know, her sex life and them, you know, changing their mind or, oh, maybe what she's studying is, it's not so taboo and maybe it's necessary. Like, you know, them also questioning their rigid mindset.
Yeah, that rigid mindset. You and I talked about that a little bit. Being a single guy who's been married and divorced, and I kind of feel like I've been there, done that. One of the things that amazes me is that someone can have gone through all that and still have hang-ups about having an enjoyable sex life and still carrying around guilt about, you know, it's supposed to look like this or it's supposed to look like that. And for me, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense anymore. Like, why would I subject myself to societal standards of how I should live, right? Of how I should enjoy myself. But still, I meet so many people who are women who are like at the same place where I am in my life. They've gone through similar experiences, but they're still stuck in the narrative of what sex is supposed to look like and when we're supposed to have it and what the circumstances are supposed to be like and all that. And to me, like, it just doesn't serve us, right? Like, life could be so much more enjoyable. And I'm not talking about not having any standards, right? Because that's something that I learned a long time ago, that I needed to have a set of values when it comes to that part of my life, every part of my life for that matter, but we're talking specifically about that part of our lives. Having a set of values and living that value system and understanding that when I go outside of it, not only do I not feel good about myself, but I'm off track spiritually, right? But I get to decide what that is. It doesn't have to be based on what I was taught as a child or what most of the people in our culture think. And it just seems like to me that because we're so repressed as in the Western world sexually, because we're so repressed, that it's almost like an all or nothing kind of thing, that people act as though either you have a certain set of standards that society would co-sign or else you have none at all. Does that resonate with you at all?
Definitely. And what comes up to mind, it's this experience that I had in college. So I went to religious college, Seventh-day Adventist, and you know, I was born into the religion. And all of a sudden, on my 22nd birthday, I see this girl in my religion classroom, and I start feeling sexual energy for her. And this has never happened to me before. Mind you, I'm in a very religious class, and being gay or homosexuality is out of the question. And I'm there day by day questioning, why am I feeling this way? And going to sleep crying because I'm going to go to hell. And I didn't understand why something that felt so good was something that God also condemned. And that's when I personally started questioning and like shaking off what other people thought I should be doing. You know, I tried my whole life to go to church, to not have sex before marriage. Obviously, I wasn't able to do that, so I carried that burden. So I tried to like do as much as I could in college to be faithful so I could go to heaven, because I don't want to go to hell. And I sacrificed everything. But when this girl came to my life, I was like, you know, this is it. This is where I draw the boundary, and it's a no for me. I'm going to go for it and forget what other people say. And I got so much, I don't know what the word it is, but scrutiny. I was being kept in classes longer than usual because the teachers wanted to talk to me extra. My tires were being slashed daily. Like, I had to change my tires so much. I was expelled from the dorm, and I couldn't understand why. People stopped talking to me that would normally talk to me. And it was the first time that I felt that rejection from humanity. You know, growing up, I was pretty, I was smart, so I was pretty likable. I never actually felt that rejection from people. And until I just went public with my girlfriend. And it really hurts. It really hurts when adults are telling you that you are wrong and that you're going to go to hell, and calling your parents and telling them what you're doing. And it's adults that you looked up to. So it was very confusing why people cared so much about my personal life. Is it really because, you know, I'm going to go to hell, right? It's like, what makes people so passionate about what other people are doing, right? It's like, this is what I believe in, and you need to agree with it and follow it. Like, why? Why can't people express what they need to express without hurting anybody and be individuals? So that's when I started questioning this whole religion thing. And that's when the first time that I stood up to my family and I said that I wasn't going to leave her, you know, but it was not easy. Like, I could not visit my family.
So why do you think it is? Why do you think it is that people can't handle that?
I believe that, you know, our beliefs is our structure. And when you start questioning people's beliefs, you're questioning their existence. If I come and break down what I believe to my grandma, she won't be able to handle it. She's happy with her belief system. And I learned that it's okay for her to believe whatever she is, because, you know, there's many ways to awakening. My problem is honor everybody's choices and journeys. And my journey, it's not the way, right? Like, it's my journey. And I just feel like when I make you believe and agree with me, I'm getting that validation that I'm right. And when you start questioning your existence, that's hardcore, right? Like, not everybody questions their existence. Not everybody questions what they're being taught or told. It's too, like, what are you going to be left with? You will have to be an empty book and then be filled up. And that takes courage to leave everything that you've been taught and start fresh. And, you know, it's definitely something that takes courage and the willingness to do. And I thank God that I did it, because I needed answers and nobody was giving me the answers. So I went and looked for them. And I'm happy with what I discovered on my own.
I love hearing you talk about that, because what I've learned in my spiritual growth, what I really believe is that we have the answers anyway. You know, we're always going outside of ourselves in general, looking for answers that we already have. And that's not a real popular belief, right? I mean, that's not what Western religion wants us to. They don't want us to be that powerful.
Right. If you need to go through somebody to reach God, you take away the power from the people. And, you know, Jesus' message was heaven's inside, right? Heaven's within. So what does that exactly mean? That you have to go inside. You have to go and discover your own self through meditation, through yoga, through psychedelics, through whatever it is that you're called to explore that inside world. You know, how long can we actually stay in our minds and stay there? It's like you were saying earlier, we're so activated by sensation, like me as well, you know, like I want to be activated by sensation, by pleasure, by sugar. We're just so in the external and on the outside. How much time are we actually discovering what's in the inside? I went to a Vipassana meditation for 10 days where you are in silence completely. You are meditating 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. You're not making any contact, eye contact. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And on day 8, I discovered why people meditate. Like, it was like 8 days of suffering. And then on the 8th day, I was like, oh, I kind of get it. And it's really something when you are in silence for so long and you actually start bringing that awareness within. And I was able to feel a lot of anger that I had. And I kept telling my teacher, like, why am I so angry? She's like, well, it's been stored and now you're feeling what's in there. And I just spent 5 days of this meditation just feeling angry for hours and not knowing why. And it was because it was coming out, everything that has been suppressed, because I'm so in the external world that my internal world was just suppressed. And I was able on the day 9 and 10 to actually go to parts of my body and go there mentally and amplify and control that sensation. So it was incredible. So like when they say that, you know, monks can control the temperature of the body, it's like, I believe it. Like, I couldn't get there, but I know that if I practice enough, I'm able to do those types of things. So it's like, wow, I'm a powerful being. You know, Jesus even said, you know, things that I'm doing, you're going to do even more. So why? That's what I tell my grandma all the time. It's like, why can't you believe I'm doing more, grandma? Like, Jesus said it. I love my grandma.
No, that the Vipassana retreat is something that I've wanted to do for a long time. And I haven't been able to, like, or I haven't prioritized getting away for 10 days to do that. But I feel like, at least on some level, I just have this belief that there's a lot of healing that's going to come with that, and that I'm kind of at a place in my life where that's the kind of healing that I need most, just to be in silence for a period of time like that and to really meditate and go within on that deep a level. So it's nice to hear someone else talk about having done that and how much you've gotten out of that. Are you going to do it again? I know the first time they want you to do the full 10 days. And then after that, don't they have 3 or 5 day retreats that you can do as well?
They actually, you know, because I'm like hardcore, I actually wanted to do a whole month. But I'm just going to start with 10 days again. But yes, I was in the mountains of Arunachala, which is South India, where people meditate. And there's this guru there that he found enlightenment in a cave. And when you sit in that cave and you meditate there, it's such an incredible experience to feel that passion for spirit, for the truth, right? And he enlightened himself by asking himself, like, who am I? And you keep asking this question and you would be astounded of what you actually hear. And so who am I asking this question, and he became enlightened.
Ramana Maharshi, right? That's
him. Yes. And I was so inspired by him that I stayed 1 month there and traveled up the mountain, which is called the Shiva Mountain, which is 4 hours. And it's a whole spiritual experience once you come up there. And when you see this devoted people to spirit, it's just really incredible. So I definitely, you know, in my process of healing and journeying, I spend a lot of time in ashrams and in journeying and discovering who I am and this heaviness. I remember asking myself, why am I feel so heavy. Like, what is this? And when you are guided by the universe, I would just kept being guided to these ashrams where I discovered more of who I am and having the time to be with myself, right? We're addicted to sensation, and being by yourself, it's not always fun, but it's the key to learning who you are and what you're about. Like, if we're not okay or happy with who we are, then we're giving away our power completely to, we're looking always for partners, like, please don't leave me, that codependency, you know. But what about you actually providing that safe house within yourself, and you bring that safety in your body by knowing who you are?
So all the work that you do, say you encounter someone who knows absolutely nothing about any of this stuff and you have to dumb it down completely, how do you describe it to that person?
I would, like, the first thing I would just describe is, look at yourself in the mirror, and what are the first things that you see? That, what are the first thoughts that come to mind? Like, what about looking at your whole body naked and then starting the journey from there? It's like, where are you standing in your own self-love and working with loving those parts, like loving the parts that you suppress or you shame, or perhaps people that told you that, you know, that they're not, that those characteristics are not welcome. For example, for me, it was that I was too much, too loud, too bossy, too this, too that. And I believed it, right? Because even though you rebel, that unconscious, you kind of have that program. They're like, oh, maybe, you know, I'm too much, I'm not lovable. Or like listening to the thoughts that, you know, your mom or your parents told you when you were a kid. Those still are in your program. So when you look at yourself in the mirror and you look at your body, you look at your eyes, just notice what comes up. And just this practice can let you know where you're standing in your self-love. And when you start loving yourself, you start loving the creator being that you are. And you start gaining that confidence. Like, oh, wow, I am a good person. And like, think about the things that you do love about yourself. And have compassion for the things that you don't like about yourself. For example, I don't like that fact that I'm, you know, super controlling, to be honest. I would like to be able to trust and relax more. So it's like, what are those parts of me that feel that they need to be in control? I'm like, okay, it's trauma. All right, let's work on the trauma. Let's hug my inner child and let her know that it's okay to not be in control, because the adult me is in control. So reparenting yourself. And when you focus on loving yourself and integrating those parts, integrating your sexuality, you'll just be a happier person. And I feel like that's the goal of all humans. It's not really acquiring or having material things. It's actually being happy. It's happiness, joy, like pleasure. Like, how good to be joyful every day. Like, that's, but I try to be happy every day. I'm not. You know, those days that I'm not, then it's like time to heal, time to self-care. But happiness, it's something that we can all achieve and will motivate us to live this life that we have here as humans. And to achieve our purpose. You know, we're all here with a purpose. And it's like finding out, what is your purpose? What makes your fire lit up? Like, what makes your heart open up? Like, what is that? And releasing what other people tell you that that should be. You know, like, if I listened to my mom, like, I would have been a doctor.
Well, you kind of are, aren't you? You're a different kind of doctor, Yulia. You're a doctor.
All right.
So, purpose. That's something I've given a lot of thought to over the years. And I actually just put together a workshop on finding your purpose. And one of the things that in the reading that I've done regarding manhood, there's a book called Fire in the Belly by an author named Sam Keen. And sort of, I've talked about this a lot on the podcast and in rooms on Clubhouse about manhood, but the basic concept of that book, one of the key concepts, is that as a man, we need to have our purpose before we try to find a partner. That we need to know what we're doing and where we're going before we try to get somebody to go with us. And whenever we have that juxtaposed, we're off track. And I know for me, most of my life, I've tried to get the partner and put the purpose stuff on the back burner. And it's never worked out very well, you know. And now I'm finally at a place in my life over the last 8 years, I guess, where because I know more specifically now, at least right now, what my purpose is, I'm just so much more grounded in who I am and more secure as a human being. And it just completely changes how I show up in relationships, right? So what's your experience with that, with men and your interactions with men, your close relationships?
Men love to be loved and pampered and to be served. And when you're able to see that and they're able to relax in that energy, then magic happens, I feel. I feel like, you know, men grow up to be tough, to not access emotions, to put up like this strong portrayal that they can take everything, and they don't access much of their emotions. So what I always recommend for my male clients is to start noticing how you feel. I have clients that haven't cried in 10 years, and not because, you know, that you're supposed to be crying often, but like, you know, when you're not able to access those feelings, then there's some sort of numbness. So what I recommend is to relax into your own feminine energy, into your own yin energy by receiving. You know, a lot of men give. They feel powerful when they give, when they're in control. And that's beautiful. But also let's explore, you know, the submissive side, the yin side. How does it feel to actually be pleasured, to be worshipped when the man doesn't have to do anything but receive? He doesn't have to do anything back. He can just receive. And that expands the man. It gives them emotions that probably they've never felt before. Like with my clients that I give tantra massages, is their first experience ever receiving from somebody that they don't have to do anything back. So when I have my clients in the bed, it's like, okay, let's just focus on emotions and sensation. What are you feeling? Let's breathe. So a lot of, not just men, but women too, like we were feeling pleasure and we stopped breathing.
Right.
It's like, okay, let's breathe. And when I'm making love with a lover and they stop breathing, I like look at them and let's breathe together, right? There's this, it's almost like, oh my God, it's too much. Let me close down. And the same thing with the orgasm comes. When we have an orgasm, what do? We contract. We contract our abs and we're like our voice, it's like shot, you know, we're just stiff as hell. But what about when that orgasm comes, you breathe into your belly, you expand your body, you look up to the third eye or up to the heavens, wherever you want to look, like you imagine that energy penetrating you and you receive that orgasmic energy through an expansion, through opening up the body, through like, you know, instead of like, there's a difference there. So my thing with a man is like, notice when you start squeezing your butt cheeks and you start lifting up the pelvis, because that's when you're getting close to ejaculating, and start noticing, okay, did I just stop breathing? You know, bringing awareness to the breath can maximize not just your pleasure, but also your love making. You know, if you're making love with someone and you're not breathing, are you really feeling pleasure? Are you really present with them? Are you feeling their pleasure? You're not breathing.
So let's talk about the life force stuff that we talked about the other day with men. You were talking about the work of Manak Chia and the multi-orgasmic male and how retaining orgasm for men, especially as they age, affects a man's energy.
So it takes, depending on your age, it takes longer for your testicles to produce the energy for you to have an ejaculation. So if your testicles take 4 days, you can have an ejaculation every 4 days and still be healthy. But what about if you're having an ejaculation every day, then that energy is not coming from the testes. It's actually coming from the kidneys, because the kidneys are our sexual centers. So what we're doing, we're depriving the kidneys from energy, and you're using that energy. And when the kidneys are spent, that energy is coming from the brain. Mm. So that's why it's important to, as a man, to learn how to sublimate, how to move that energy up and not just ejaculate every time, because you are losing vital life force energy every single time. So through tantric practices, the work that I do with men, I teach them how to do the microcosmic orbit, how to sublimate, how to separate ejaculation from orgasm, where you're able to breathe the sexual energy up and still have orgasms, but retaining your life force energy, your semen. And this way, you know, you're able to do projects, keep your creative energy. You know, Napoleon Hill talked about it as well in his book of, like, one of the ways to make money is using your sexual energy to manifest and sublimate it. So the people that practice this, they have a higher actual sex drive, because you're always moving that energy up. And it's like you're charging your body. Like, if your body's a battery, you're charging this energy. So with women, we actually don't lose any energy when we orgasm. We actually give energy. So it's important that if you are a man and you are in giving pleasure to a woman and she's about to have an orgasm, for you to breathe it in, like breathe that orgasmic energy, because it's a life force that they're gifting to you. So the woman loses energy through their menstruation. So there's Taoist practices that help sublimate that energy. And I know that my teacher, she was able to stop her menstrual cycle for 9 months, all from Qigong sublimation. And that's how we as women keep our life force energy.
Hmm.
So another way of men tapping into their sensuality, to their power, it's through an anal massage. You know, that is such a taboo topic in the West, like no other, and also Latin America. And what I found with clients that allow an anal massage and the ones that don't, is that they're able to feel more pleasure and more emotions in general. So I definitely see a difference when a client comes for a tantra massage and does get the anal massage, and then when it doesn't. So the anus for men is where all the emotions are, and that's why they protect it so much, right? It's like it's there's a lot of armor, you know, by society, all these thoughts that, you know, that if you have any pleasure, it's like you're gay, and, you know, it's like prohibited. I cannot talk about anal massage to my uncle, for example, to any of my Puerto Rican males, because it's such a big block. It's like a big no. But when I traveled and worked in Europe, for example, that was welcome. And what I found was that these men were more comfortable within their bodies. They had more experience, more pleasure, and they were able to talk about their emotions more easily. So it's a big topic because it's like I wish that everybody, and not, you know, not just like males anus, just the anus in general, would be talked about more because it's still taboo for women as well. Just like the discover the gift and the pleasure that the anus has. And I feel like it's not talked about, and we only see this, you know, in porn, for example. And we get scared, like, oh my God, it's gonna hurt, blah, blah, blah. But if you do it correctly, if you take the time, if you massage the body and you caress it, you don't push anything, it's just, the body slowly opens. You know, it takes 1 hour for the body to actually open. So that's why my sessions, my tantric sessions, are from 90 minutes to 2 to 3 hours, even 4, because it takes a long time for the body to open up and to receive pleasure. I remember one time that I had a lover activate my whole body for 3 hours just by touching me very lightly. He never kissed me or even touched my breast or my vulva at all. It all focused on activating my skin for 3 hours. So by the time of those 3 hours, like, I'm ready to go, you know. And we miss this because we're like, oh, in a rush, or like this and that. And like, it's great to have that type of fast connection. I enjoy it as well, but also I know how good it feels when you do take your time and activate the body and let the body completely open. And for men, if they receive the tantric massage, if they had the right provider, and like, let's say, oh, okay, I've never had an anal massage, let me explore this, you might find pleasure that you might not even be ready for. I remember one time one client told me, like, what am I going to do after this? Like, am I going to have to ask for women to give me anal massages now? And I'm like, well, if that's what you want. He's like, oh my God. Like, it he just had so much pleasure. He did not know what to do with himself. And that's, the potential is there. If we can open up the mindset of an organ, like, right, it's an organ. It's part of the human body. Release whatever's around it and actually explore it with curiosity, with innocence, you would find like so much pleasure. Like,
it's a shame that people are so uptight. That's what saddens me about all this stuff, that people are so uptight about their sex lives. That, to me, like, if you're single and you meet someone and the chemistry's there and you want to have sex on the first date, both of you, like, why the hell wouldn't you just do that? Right? I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. And I'm not saying that that's what we should be doing all the time or anything like that. But also, you know, as a man in his 40s who's been married and divorced, and you know, if I meet someone at the same place in life, you know, why would I, you know, why would you not? I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the shame that we carry, society, right?
Yeah. Like, well, like the reputation thing you talked about, like, what does that say about me if I do that? Right? Mm-hmm. What does that say about me if I do that? And we're trained to believe, well, that means you're a slut or whatever it is, right? And we carry that.
Mm-hmm. So I recently like had an experience with a lover that I like planned out this whole tantric, you know, we were going to see each other and we were not going to have sex until like the fourth day after, like, you know, we did a whole tantric retreat. Like, I had like this whole structure. And when I got there and the juices were flowing, I was like, it's okay. And I'm going to do it right now. And you know what? It was incredible. So it's like, I don't have to do anything that I don't desire, right? Like, I don't have to obey anything. Like, I am my own boss. But I also, like, I understand how we still carry, like, other people's burdens in me. Like, I remember, you know, being all, like, super into the spirituality and, like, never having, you know, like, one night stands and, like, just shaming the hell out of it. And then I had a one night stand and I'm like, oh my God, I had a one night stand and I felt shame about it. I'm like, actually, this is not okay either. Like, I can be my sovereign self. If I want to have sex right now, I will, and I'm still empowered. So it's like releasing that thought that, oh, I need to, like, you know, there's a saying that if a man dates, has sex with you on the first date, that they don't, you know, they don't care about you. And then there's all this evidence that is true. And I'm like, no, that's not true, you know? So it's like releasing this beliefs that this has to be a certain way. Like, you know, I don't have to be considered a slut if I sleep on the first date. Like, and even if I'm a slut, then what? Then so what?
Right.
So what?
Right. All right. Well, I just noticed that you messaged me like 17 minutes ago that you have 15 minutes left. So.
All right. I have 15 minutes extra.
Okay. Great. Great. All right. So looking back on your life, when was the time when the younger Yulia needed encouragement, support, advice? When was the time she needed it most? And what would you go back and say to her?
It would be the time where I was in high school. I remember in high school, I found a poster of this girl that looked homeless and she looked like me. Like, that was the weirdest thing. Like, this girl looked like me. And it was a poster about, like, abused women. And I brought that poster to my house because it looked so much like me that I lied to my family. And I said, look, this is me. And they believed it. By me saying to my family that this was me, and that the status of this person in the picture was pretty bad, I was sharing how in the dark I was. So I feel like in my teenagers, I was very depressed and I was also unseen. It was like I was transparent. So I would have loved to go there and like watch the poster like that she's showing me and then show her compassion and let her know that she's not abandoned and alone and dirty and, yeah, miserable. And I would hold her and let her know that she's going to do great things, not just for herself, but for a lot of people in the world.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I can relate a lot to that feeling of being transparent or feeling transparent, not seen. And it's not a great feeling for a kid to have. So, well, I definitely see you now. I mean, for sure. And so does everybody else. And it's pretty inspiring. So I really appreciate you doing this and taking the time.
I appreciate you.
Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org. All right, there you go, Yulia Rose. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, wherever you listen. Every little bit helps. If you know someone who you think would enjoy it, you can pretty easily forward it to them. I try to make it simple to do that on the website, thepathtoauthenticity.com. I want to thank the show's sponsor, The Manor in Windrose Recovery. Thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. Always have rooms going on Clubhouse right now. I'm just about to begin a 6-week series on codependence. Got some great interviews lined up that I'm really excited about. Winding down the end of this year. Been a rough couple years, man. 2022 is going to be good. So, as always, thank you for investing your time in this show. I truly appreciate it. Hope you have a great week. Be nice. This episode was brought to you by Equivox. For digital marketing or web design services, visit Equivox.com.